Others tried it, but they've all died. Some people break their arms or legs slipping down the trail, but just because you can get hurt doesn't mean you shouldn't climb waterfalls. I'm so grateful someone had the courage to build that bridge. I'm sure it was dangerous work. But they did it. And now everyone can see what it's like to stand on top of such a waterfall. It captures your heart, Owen. She had a faraway look in her eyes, a brightness and eagerness that made him yearn to see it for himself. Then she looked at him and patted his knee. When we go up north, I'll take you up to Mist Falls. I'll hold your hand as we jump off that rock, just as my papa did for me. After that, you won't be afraid of anything. The warmth from the ovens made his cheeks burn, but he was still cold beneath the wet clothes. He could picture himself standing on a mountainside with the Mortimer girl next to him. The thought of jumping off a waterfall made his head buzz.
Owen, guess what? She whispered, leaning toward him. I found it.
What?
He shook his head to clear it. I found where that wall leads from the castle. I saw it out a window. It leads to a small courtyard, and there's the cistern.
Owen interrupted, gazing at her. Her eyes went wide.
You saw it?
He nodded.
I think I found the way in,
she said conspiratorially. I'm beginning to wonder if the alliance I've struck with the Queen's poisoner will be fatal. Ratcliffe insists she invaded the King's bedchamber last night, shortly before midnight. That cannot be true because she was, in fact, with me at that time discussing the King's enemies and which nobles are most likely to fall next. It's my opinion it will be Lord Asilomar. The King has set up a trap to test his loyalty. He will fail. I'm wondering when mine will be tested. If Ratcliffe knew that I was working for her, I'd be thrown into the river.
Dominique Mancini, Espion of the Palace Kitchen. Chapter 19. Deep Cisterns. Owen and the Mortimer girl faced each other over a wiser board in the library. Each move was painstakingly slow. Owen could have won several times already with the tricks he had learned from Anchorette, but the goal wasn't to win the game. The goal was for Jewel to fall asleep. Owen had added some additional ingredients to her tea, and the old woman was making a bold effort of fighting off the effects. She sat in a stuffed chair, and the needlework in her hands kept bobbing and dipping.
I think she's almost asleep,
Owen whispered, moving the next piece. His companion gazed surreptitiously at the old woman in the chair. Jewel's mouth had sagged open, and her breath had begun to pull in and out in curt little gasps. The Mortimer girl almost giggled as she looked back at Owen with her bewitching eyes that were part green, part blue, part gray. She wore a dark green velvet dress with cuffs that matched her hem. Her dark hair was swept back behind her.
You were right, she whispered in reply. She normally doesn't fall asleep like this when she's watching us. But choosing a boring game like Wiser and playing it so quietly. Just look at her. Should we go?
Owen nodded. They had several hours before the effects of the tea would wear off. The Mortimer girl grabbed his hand but paused to move one of the game pieces with her free hand.
Threat, she said after the move, indicating a surprise attack he had not expected.
Leave it to her to show talent at a complicated game she found boring.
Come on, she said, tugging him to follow.
The two crept away from the library, their footfalls silenced by the thick carpet. As soon as they were past the doors, they broke into a run. Owen let her guide as she knew the way. There was always a thrill to being naughty, and he could tell it was coursing through them both. There were servants all around, but everyone in the palace knew about Owen's satchel and the Mortimer girl, and there were only a few grunts and warnings not to get underfoot. Their destination was a side corridor by the servants' quarters. The level of dust on the floor showed it was not well traveled. A big, sturdy door met them at the end of the corridor. Owen had tried it before and found it locked, so he had never been back again. The Mortimer girl grinned at him mischievously.
There is a window in the door. I dragged that basket over and stood on it, and that's how I saw the secret place.
But the door is locked, Owen said, yanking on the iron latch. It rattled but did not loosen.
I know, but look over there. See the tapestry? Why would there be a tapestry in the middle of a hall that no one uses?
Owen hadn't noticed it before, and it did look a little strange. The tapestry was suspended from an iron pole fastened into the stone. The Mortimer girl winked and walked over to it, then pulled it aside. The tapestry concealed a curtained window.
The curtain is thick enough to disguise the light, she explained. Look how dusty the window is, too.
Owen saw the window had a bar latch, and he pulled on it. It was stuck. They exchanged a look and then gripped it tighter, wrestling with the bar latch. It was tight as a drum.
I couldn't do it myself, she gasped. But I thought, the two of us...
Owen squinted and frowned, pulling even harder. The latch finally shifted and swung back, knocking them both to the floor. She landed on top of him, and they had to stifle nervous giggles.
It's open, she squealed excitedly.
Rushing back to the tapestry, she pushed it aside and shoved at the glass. The window groaned open.
Help me up, she said.
Owen grabbed her around the waist and helped her onto the windowsill.
It's covered in vines.
She scooted around and grabbed a fistful of vines and began lowering herself down.
How far down is it?
Owen asked, his worry growing. She let go of the vines and dropped down. Her face was still visible from the window. She beamed at him.
Not far. Come on.
Owen listened for sounds of anyone approaching in the corridor, but heard nothing. He climbed up onto the windowsill on his own and scooted off and jumped. There was a brickwork on the ground outside, and the shade from the vines helped conceal him and the Mortimer girl. He reached back and slowly shut the window, making sure to leave it ajar so they could get back in. There was ivy everywhere, smothering the wall. She had a leaf of it sticking to her hair as she peered at the walled-in courtyard. There was the well hole in the middle.
Come on,
she whispered, taking his hand and starting to creep forward. They both looked and listened for any warning sounds. Their boots scuffed on the bricks. Owen gazed up and saw Anchorette's tower. If she was looking out the window, she would be able to see them. The sun was high overhead, making their shadows small at their feet.
I love wicked ideas like this one, she said with delight, searching around for any signs they'd get caught.
They approached the well hole. It went down like steps. There were runners and gutters that led to the 8 points, and he could discern a slight slope in the bricks. This well made the water run down into it.
So, this is the cistern? Owen said.
They reached the outer rim and stared down into the huge dark circle.
That's what my grandpapa said. It collects rainwater during the winter. It goes under the palace quite a ways. That's why there's no dungeon. The palace was built on a cistern.
Owen had never heard that word before she had first said it to him. The black gaping hole was wide enough that they could have stood across it without being able to reach each other. But he intuitively understood the structure.
It doesn't lead to a water spring, which makes sense since the palace is on a hill. It would be hard to carry water up from the river every day.
Exactly, she said excitedly. The cistern catches the water and holds it.
She stepped down into the first ring of stones, trying to pull him along, but he yanked his hand away.
What are you doing?
He asked, his stomach twisting with fear.
I want to look down.
She tried to take his hand again, but he stepped back.
Oh, come on, Owen, let's just look.
He was curious, but cautious. His brush with danger outside the king's chamber had rattled him, and he wasn't feeling very courageous.
Hold on, he said.
He wanted to come down at his own pace. She shrugged and hurried to the edge so she could kneel down and stare into the abyss. Her eyes lit with wonder.
Look how deep it is.
Owen frowned. There was no way he was going to let her enjoy it all by herself. He stiffened his lip and marched down to the edge.
Move over.
She scooted to the side, and their heads almost touched as they leaned in. He felt her hair brush against his. It made him feel
funny. The cistern was half empty. The waters rippled beneath them, and he could see their own reflections warped on the placid surface. The chamber was deep, very deep. There were columns of stone and buttresses supporting it. There were numbers and little gashes carved into the column nearest the hole. The numbers meant how deep the water was, and he could tell by the numbers at the top of the column that the cistern was just over half full. "There is a lot of water down there," he announced. The Mortimer girl brushed hair over her ear and gripped the edge of the cistern opening before lowering her head deep inside. "Hello!" she called out, and her voice echoed. Owen thought she was insane. "Why did you call out?" he demanded. She pulled her head back up.
"I wanted to see if there was anyone down there. Maybe there's a water sprite."
"Water sprites aren't real," Owen said stiffly.
"Yes, they are,"
she contradicted. "Have you ever seen one?"
"Just because I haven't doesn't mean they're not real. Don't be stupid, Owen. Of course they're real. Papa said so. He said there is treasure under the deepest fathoms of the sea. Ancient swords that can't rust. Magic rings. There's another world there that we can't see. The ocean is its own kingdom."
She looked him in the face, her eyes wide and sincere.
"I'm not making up stories, Owen. It's true. The people who drown are those who try to join the water sprites but fail. They fail because they're afraid."
She gave him a determined look.
"I'm not afraid."
He looked at her, his stomach doing some twisting and turning. He admired her for her courage, her fearlessness. And somehow he knew what she was going to suggest before she announced it.
"Let's jump in!"
Owen hastily rose and backed away.
"That's foolish."
"No, it's not," she laughed. "I've jumped from higher rocks into colder ponds than this. It's fun."
He could not believe his ears.
"But how will you get out?"
She shrugged.
"I don't know. The same way they get the water out. This is where the water comes in. I don't see any chains or ropes, so there's got to be another place where the water is drawn."
"But you could drown."
"I'm a very good swimmer. Can't you swim, Owen?"
"I can swim," he said, offended.
"Then jump with me,"
she said, eyes blazing. She reached out her hand again. His heart hammered violently in his chest, and his mouth went so dry with fear he felt he couldn't talk. The fear crippled him, making his ears buzz and his knees weak. He could taste bile in his mouth. His eyes started to water. The Mortimer girl watched him closely. Her excitement was still evident, but she seemed to sense what was happening to him. She walked around the drain hole and stood in front of him, nose to nose. Then she took his trembling hand in hers.
"You're afraid, I know. But you have to trust me, Owen Kiskaden. The water is deep enough. We won't get hurt. I don't know everything that will happen, but we'll find our way out. Let's do it together. Jump with me. That's how I did it the first time, with Papa holding my hand. It's scary, it really is, but we're going to have so much fun. Trust me, Owen. Trust me."
He stared into her eyes, still unable to tell what color they were. He couldn't speak. His tongue was too thick in his mouth. He was terrified out of his wits, but he didn't want to disappoint her. For once, he wasn't thinking of the risks or the odds of injury. There was just this moment. Her warm hand in his, and his trust in her.
"We can do it," she coaxed.
She led him back to the lip of the cistern. He stared down, and the water looked even farther down this time. It looked as if they were standing on Ankaret's tower. He felt his stomach lurch. He was going to be sick. She stood next to him, her hand linked with his.
"Are you ready?"
she whispered. Owen nodded violently, trying to swallow.
"Take a breath and hold it, on three."
He felt as if his whole body would shake apart.
"One!"
This was madness. Why was he doing this?
"Two!"
He stared down at the water. He took a huge gulp of air and held it in his chest. He squeezed her hand as hard as he could, hoping it would hurt her.
"Three!"
They jumped. Chapter 20. Secrets. It was a long fall. Longer than Owen had thought possible. He watched the water rush up, but it still felt like they were falling. The buzzing, giddy thrill in his stomach went all the way to his ears before the water splashed and they went under. It was like jumping into a giant blanket. The cold water closed over him, smothering him, until his swelling lungs buoyed him to the surface and he came up spluttering. As he thrashed around, terrified and thrilled, the water began to drain from his ears and he could hear the Mortimer girl giggling. He wasn't holding her hand anymore, but she was paddling right in front of him, her smile mischievous and full of pride that he had jumped too.
"Wasn't that amazing?"
she gasped, kicking the water to keep herself afloat. Owen's tunic and pants were waterlogged, but he had no trouble treading water. Looking up, he stared at the huge hole overhead and the sunlight beaming down on them. Owen nodded eagerly, feeling the lingering thrill in his blood. He would do that again. He would do that 100 times.
"I told you it was fun," she chided, splashing him lightly. "You'll love jumping off the boulders by the waterfalls. This water isn't even very cold."
She reached up and brushed away wet clumps of hair from her cheek.
"You did it!"
Owen smiled shyly at her, knowing he never would have done it without her, then stared back up at the gaping octagonal hole above them. "We need to figure out how to get back up."
"Look! A little boat!"
She was pointing to a series of stone steps leading up to a square. A small boat was sitting on the square, the oars poking over the ridge. The stairs continued up past the square, leading to a wooden door.
"It's a way out,"
Owen said, his heart gushing with relief. He observed that the door was about as high as the hole in the ceiling. They swam the short distance and discovered the staircase extended into the water. They were sopping wet and dripping, but that was no concern to them at all as they tromped up the stairs. Before continuing, they stopped to examine the boat. It was a small canoe-shaped thing, big enough for maybe 2 adults. There was a pair of oars leaning upright in the interior. The wood was polished and well-worn. Owen was wondering why a canoe was there. But then he saw that the cistern extended down quite a distance, probably underneath the entire length of the palace, which formed the roof of the cistern. The Mortimer girl knelt by the canoe, rocking it slightly to see how sturdy it was before she followed Owen's gaze across the shadowed waters.
"They keep this boat here so they can get to the other side without getting wet," she said. "Come on, let's check the door. I hope it isn't locked."
She grabbed his arm and pulled him up the stone steps. The water still rippled and lapped against the lower steps, disturbed by their plummet from above. The noises echoed eerily in the dark cistern, making Owen look back and stare into the blackness. The door was narrow and wedged into a brace of stone. There was a handle and an intricate locking mechanism that was not operated by a key. The Mortimer girl tugged on the handle, but the door held firm. Owen recognized the lock as an espion design, one that needed to be released from the outside. He pushed her hands away from the handle and quickly examined the mechanism. In moments, he figured out the triggering part and released the latch.
"How did you..."
she stammered in amazement, staring at him with open admiration. He shrugged and said nothing, not wanting to reveal anything Anchorette had taught him about the ways of the espion. The door took some pulling to open, and they saw a weave of ivy blocking the way, which explained why they hadn't seen the door while they were in the courtyard beyond. The mouth of the cistern was not far away.
"I'm jumping again,"
she declared, and rushed out the door. He followed her and then watched as she rushed up to the edge and made her jump. He could hear the squeal before the splash sounded below him. Owen's heart hammered with nervousness. He had done it once. He could do it on his own.
"Come on down," she called to him. "I'm out of the way."
He stared at the hole, pursed his lips, and then marched up to it. He stared down, his stomach wrenching violently as he stared down at the drop. There she was, paddling just outside the fringe of light in the shadowy waters, gazing up at him, her face beaming. Owen counted in his heart. One. Two. He stopped before thinking three and just jumped. It was even more fun the second time, and he cut through the water like a knife, plunging through the depths. He went down all the way to the bottom until he felt the stone of the floor. Bubbles streamed up around him, and he opened his eyes. And he saw casks of glittering jewels and coins. Strange jeweled scabbards and ropes of pearls covered the floor of the cistern. There was a battered shield with a huge gouge on its polished surface. None of the metal was rusted. He saw glass vials with stoppers. He kicked off the floor and rose to the surface, spluttering with shock.
You did it!
The Mortimer girl beamed.
I knew you weren't too scared. I want to jump again.
She started swimming toward the steps.
Wait,
he said, half choking and spitting out some water.
There's treasure.
She turned mid-stroke and looked at him, confused.
What did you say?
Down at the bottom,
he said excitedly, paddling hard.
I saw it.
She looked confused.
I can see the bottom, Owen. It's just stone. Stop teasing.
Owen stared down and could only see his reflection in the water. He plunged his head below the surface, blinking rapidly despite the pain in his eyes and the watery view. This time he saw nothing but stone and shadows. He pulled his face up, dripping.
I saw something. I'm not teasing. When I jumped, I held my arms stiff and went all the way to the bottom. I opened my eyes and saw piles of treasure. There were swords.
Swords? She asked in wonder. Let me try it.
She swam to the steps and slogged up them, hiking up her skirts and pattering water like she was a rain cloud. She marched back up to the door, which they had left ajar, and Owen moved away from the circle of light on the water. He wiped his face and waited for her shadow to appear above him. He kept making circles in the water, paddling slowly to keep afloat despite the heavy feel of his soaked clothes. Then the Mortimer girl was plummeting again, spraying him with water when she struck the surface. She stayed down a long time. He could see her vague shape beneath the rippling waters. Then she was kicking toward the surface again. When she broke the surface, she splashed water in his face.
You were teasing,
she said indignantly.
No, I wasn't, Owen said angrily.
He swam back to the steps himself, marched back up them, and returned to the hole. Water streamed from his hair into his face, and he left huge puddles that drained into the small channels leading to the opening of the cistern. The stone was painted with water droplets and wet shapes the size of feet. He stood at the edge of the cistern, full of confidence this time. When he jumped back in, he held his body rigid again and allowed himself to sink down. He tried to keep his eyes open during the fall, but as soon as he struck water, he shut them instinctively. Then his feet touched the floor. As soon as he opened his eyes, he saw the treasures nestled on the floor below. He tried swimming toward one of the chests, seeing a golden ring encrusted with gemstones. If he could grab it and bring it back to her, then she would believe him. But as he struggled, he felt himself floating up away from it, as if something were pulling at his foot. His lungs were burning for air. He came up spluttering again. Just like before, the treasure seemed to have disappeared when he looked down below. The Mortimer girl was staring at him, looking concerned.
You aren't teasing, are you?
He shook his head, wanting to swim back down so he could prove it to her. She grabbed his arm.
Let's go, Owen. I don't feel good about this. You were down a long time. I don't want to drown. Let's go.
He felt a strong compulsion to swim to the bottom of the cistern again. Maybe if he let the air out of his lungs, he would be able to stay down longer. Or if he let out his breath before jumping, he could...
Owen!
She said firmly, sharply.
Come on! We'll get in trouble if we're gone too long.
She reached out and gripped his shirt and pulled him toward the canoe. He had the urge to shove her away. There was treasure in the cistern. Maybe it was the king's treasure. Was this where some of the fountain coins ended up after a wish was granted? His mind reeled with ideas and possibilities. He wanted to take some of the coins, just a handful, and maybe one of the swords. In his distraction, the Mortimer girl had managed to pull him back to the stone steps. There was water in his ears, and marching up the stone made them feel strange and squishy. She was talking to him, but he could not understand her well. He was seized by the determination to jump back into the water and look again. Maybe he would come back tonight when she was asleep. Then he'd prove it to her. "There was something down there," Owen said sulkily. She looked at him worriedly.
"People drown all the time when they're not careful, Owen. Even little babies can drown in a bucket. Come, let's get dry."
When the door shut behind them, Owen heard the click of the latch closing. This time he saw what he had previously missed, a small wire folded by a stone in the wall. It was the latch trigger. They could use the door from either side. Then they lay down in the stone courtyard, the sun still high overhead. She squeezed the hem of her dress, and he listened to the little sounds of the moisture being squished out. They lay, heads just touching, staring up at the blue sky, which had a few fleecy clouds.
"Don't come back here without me," she said quietly.
Owen wriggled his finger in his ear because of the tickling water. He ignored her request.
"Owen, please don't come back here without me. It isn't safe to swim alone. My papa taught me that."
"Why?" Owen challenged. "I'm a good swimmer."
"So am I," she said, sounding even more concerned. "But bad things can still happen. Please don't come back here without me. Promise me."
"Why do I have to?" he asked, frowning.
"Please, Owen. Promise me you won't. If you say you won't, I'll believe you."
He felt a darkness brooding in his heart. Resentment. Who was she to tell him what to do?
"Will you promise me that you won't?" he demanded.
"Of course," she said.
Then she turned over and got up on her knees so that she was looking down at him. Her eyes were the color of the cistern water now. She gave him a pleading look.
"I promise you, Owen Kiskaden, that I will not come here alone. This is our secret place. I won't even tell my grandpapa that we found it. I promise you."
Owen felt guilty now. He had made her promise, and now he would have to do the same. He didn't want to make the promise. She was always so open about what she thought and felt. Owen had not felt free since leaving Tatton Hall, and his entire life seemed shadowed with secrets.
"Please," she begged,
reaching out and taking his hand. It hurt to be forced like this, but he gave way, as part of him knew he must.
"I will,"
he mumbled with a hint of regret. Why did she have to make things so difficult?
"I promise you, Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer, that I won't come here alone. This is our secret place."
Then he smirked.
"I won't tell your grandfather either."
She seemed to grin and frown at the same time, which he knew was not possible, and added a shove as well.
"I promise,"
he finished. He stared into her eyes, those strange, bewitching eyes. Part of him wanted to go to the north with her to see the waterfalls she had described, to stand on the bridge overlooking the drop. What would it be like, he wondered, to go over the falls? It was a punishment given to those who broke sanctuary or broke troth to the king. His brother Jorgannon had likely perished this way. He thought of the river rushing past Our Lady and the tumultuous falls just beyond. What would it feel like?
"Thank you,"
the Mortimer girl said, and then leaned forward and kissed his cheek. She took his hand in hers.
"Can I call you something else?"
he blurted out. She looked confused.
"Something else? What do you mean?"
He wasn't sure how to say it exactly, and he worried she would get upset.
"It's just that... well, your name is so long."
"You don't like my name?"
Her eyes were wide with growing surprise. I love your name. I just don't like saying it all every time I want to talk to you. You call me Owen. That's short. I thought maybe I could call you something short, too, just between us. She stared at him, her lips pressed tight, and he could see her consternation.
Like what?
She asked.
I don't know.
It's just an idea. I know you like your middle name, so maybe something that mixes it with your first? I was thinking... Evie.
Her expression changed into a pleased smile when he said the name.
Evie. It's a girl's name, first of all. It means lively. Do you think I'm lively?
He couldn't think of a better word to describe her and nodded eagerly. He hadn't known the origin of the name before suggesting it. She was smarter than him that way.
She tapped her chin, thinking about it as if it were the biggest decision in her life.
Well, I don't think I'd mind too much, but I'd only let you call me that, a pet name.
She sat a little straighter, even though her clothes were sopping wet and her hair was scraggly.
Very well, Owen Kiskaden. You may call me Evie.
She continued to hold his hand as they walked back to the window from which they'd come. It was still ajar, still waiting for them. Owen helped her climb up, and after she listened at the tapestry for noises, she knelt on the ledge and helped him climb up. They scooted down and shut the window behind them, keeping the secret. The desire to go back to the cistern and swim for the treasure was fading as they walked. She started chattering about something, her dark hair stringy and damp, her boots squeaking as they walked. Turning the corner, they collided with a huge fat man, and the impact nearly knocked them both down. It was Mancini. Owen's heart startled with fear, but he also felt a thrill. They had not been caught at the cistern.
"What are you doing over here?"
the fat man asked in a chuffed voice.
"Why are you so wet?"
"You know us, Mancini,"
Evie said, grabbing Owen's hand and swinging his arm.
"We love to play in the fountains."
"It's disrespectful to play in fountains," he said, his eyes narrowing.
"You did it," Owen rebuffed, reminded of Mancini's game with the pigeons at the sanctuary. The boy startled. He had spoken to an adult, to someone he normally feared. Mancini stared at him as if he had suddenly sprouted a second nose.
"Have you decided to start speaking at last, Master Kiskaden? Is Lady Mortimer's banter contagious?"
"It's Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer," Owen said challengingly. He felt a little naughty, defying a grown-up.
Then he gripped her hand and pulled her away before Mancini could ask any more questions.
"The kingdom of Ceredigion has an interesting method for burying the dead, involving its rivers and waterfalls. When a person dies, they are not laid in a tomb or a sarcophagus. They are laid in a narrow boat or canoe with a few worldly possessions and set loose into a river near the falls. According to superstition, they are transported to the world of the deep fathoms after tumbling off the falls. This is why coins are tossed into fountains. They petition the dead for miracles in our world. Not only are the dead handled this way, it is also a form of justice for capital crimes. Someone guilty of treason is tied up in a canoe and shoved into the river. Vigilante justice dispenses with the boat altogether. If someone survives the fall, they are deemed innocent by the fountain. You can imagine that only a few ever survive such an ordeal. I heard from Ratcliffe that Lord Asilomar failed his test of loyalty to the king, and he, along with his children, will be disembarking from Our Lady tomorrow at noon. There is always a crowd at such events.
Dominique Mancini, Espion of the Palace Kitchen.
Chapter 21. Pinecone.
Anchorette did not want to play wiser that night. Instead, she taught Owen about potions and herbs and explained the properties of woundwort, feverfew, and wisteria, and how to recognize the various plants.
He had noticed an improvement in his wheezing since drinking her tea each night, and he was curious to learn more. She taught him about harmful plants, like nightshade, which, depending on the dosage, could either help a mother during a difficult pregnancy or kill a man. While they talked, she listened eagerly to his tales of adventure with Evie, but he omitted the story about the cistern because he'd promised to keep it secret. He even told her about being rude to Mancini. He longed to ask her about the treasure he had seen, but he could not do that without betraying the secret. The Queen's poisoner listened carefully, watching his face most intently. There was something about her keen interest that intrigued him. From the look in her eyes, it was as if he were sharing the most interesting story imaginable. She waited patiently until he was done, and then she grew serious.
"Owen, time is running short," she said. "The king will start destroying those who were disloyal to him before Ambion Hill. I wanted to have more time to prepare, to practice with you, but we just don't have it."
His heart lurched, and he felt a sick, dark feeling bloom in his chest.
"Many families will fall during the purge," she said. "Maybe even your own. The thought of such a loss would be difficult for anyone, Owen, but especially for a little boy. Know that whatever happens, your parents would want you to live, to be safe. That is why they sent you here, why the fountain may have sent you here."
Owen shuddered, feeling miserable. Would he never see Tatton Hall again? His world had become King Fountain Palace. The thought of not playing with Evie made him feel awful. What about Leona in the kitchen? He was already forgetting what home was like, for he had been away for so many months. This new world, this dangerous world, had become familiar. He squeezed Anchorette's hands worriedly.
"Now is the time to act, Owen."
She reached out and smoothed some of his hair, then gently stroked the side of his head as if she were petting him.
"Time to trick the king. You must do this. The idea was mine, but you must be the one to act. Are you ready to hear more about the plan?"
He nodded nervously, trying to quell the budding panic in his stomach.
"The king is clever."
She nodded appreciatively.
"But not as clever as I am. Listen to my idea. In the game Wiser, which is the most powerful piece? Is it the one marking the king?"
"No, it's the Wiser piece. It can move in any direction as far as it wants."
She nodded in agreement.
"There will come a day when people forget what the Wiser piece represents. Perhaps they will even remove it from the board. The Wiser piece exists because it reminds us of the very first king of Ceredigion, King Andrew, the one who bound all the disparate chiefs and kings together under one crown. You see, that king had an advisor, someone who was fountain-blessed. He was a great man, could move leagues away with his magic. That is why the piece can move the farthest. He was unique among his kind. He was called the King's Wiser. In other lands, the title is Vizier. His name was Myrdan. He has an interesting story, but I won't tell it to you now. Some fountain blessed are gifted with archery, some with music, some even with running. There's the story of an ancient man who ran for 3 days without stopping and then died after delivering his message. Myrdan's power, his magic from the fountain, was his ability to see the future. They say it nearly drove him mad. It is the most rare gift that a fountain blessed can have, Owen."
"I don't understand," Owen said, blinking with confusion.
"This is the gift that you must trick the king into believing you have," she said with a wry smile. "Now lay your head on my lap and close your eyes."
They were both sitting on the edge of her bed. It was late, but Owen was not sleepy yet. Although he was still unsettled and confused, he did as she asked. Once his head was settled in her lap, she began stroking the hair away from his forehead.
Keep your eyes closed and listen to my voice.
Her hand lightly stroked his forehead, smoothing away his hair. Her voice was soft, coaxing, melodious.
I had a dream last night. It was a strange dream. I was in a high tower. It was as tall as a mountain. I could see everything, even the birds. As I looked from the window, I saw Our Lady. At Our Lady, I saw a branch with a swollen pine cone amidst the needles. The pine cone was fat and heavy. It fell off the branch into the river and went over the falls. That was my dream.
I like that, Owen said, smiling. I like pine trees, except for the sap.
The sap is sticky, isn't it?
Anchorette said, a smile in her voice. She kept stroking his hair.
Let me tell you the story again. You must remember it.
Then, with an even softer voice, she repeated the story, not deviating from a single word. She had memorized it. As she spoke, and as he listened, he felt the distant shushing noise of the river. It was the sound of the waterfall at Our Lady. Anchorette was a great storyteller. He could imagine the waters rushing and falling like an avalanche of snow. He could hear the far-off roar of the falls, even from the poisoner's tower. And he could imagine a big, fat pine cone plopping into the water and being carried over the falls.
Can you remember it? She asked him. Can you remember the story?
I think so, Owen said.
Let me tell you again, she said.
He felt her body move and shift, and she stopped stroking his hair. Then she started again on the story, using the same words as before, the same lulling tone of voice. The churn of the water grew louder. Anchorette pressed something into his hand. It was hard and jagged and pointy. A pine cone. He did not want to squeeze it too hard, but he held it in a firm grip. Then he heard the sound of little things snapping. Anchorette put something in front of his nose, and he smelled the scent of pine needles. When she finished the story, he opened his eyes, still gripping the pine cone and smelling the scent.
This is your dream, Owen, she said, helping him sit up.
She put a hand on his shoulder.
You must tell the king about it in the morning during breakfast.
Owen stared at her in surprise.
Me?
He asked. She squeezed his shoulder.
It's better that you don't understand what the dream means. He will. You must tell him this morning, Owen. The next day will be too late. Have courage.
He stared at her solemnly.
This will trick the king? He asked.
She nodded, eyes deep and serious.
What will he do when I tell him?
Owen asked, excited and nervous at the same time.
I don't know, she answered. I can only guess. But it will be his move next. And I'm very good at Wiser.
Owen fidgeted nervously in the breakfast hall. He had stayed up quite late talking with Anchorette, but he was not sleepy at all. She normally sent him to bed when she felt pain, but for some reason she had felt better, and they had stayed up talking. Evie was chattering away next to Owen, but he was having a difficult time concentrating on her words.
I hope Jewel falls asleep again today, but it might be too much to ask, she said conspiratorially. I would love to jump back into the cistern again, especially in the afternoon when it's so hot. But 2 days in a row would be suspicious. The servants may discover us. Let's not go back today. I really don't think it would be wise. Where else would you like to explore? We haven't been to the stables in a while. How about there?
She waited a moment and then tugged on his arm.
How about the stables?
What? He asked, turning to face her.
There was a mischievous look on her face.
You weren't even listening. How rude, Owen Kiskaden. I don't think I'll marry you after all, if that's how you're going to behave. You're probably daydreaming about the treasure.
He saw Dunsworth approaching and quickly warned her to be silent.
What treasure? Dunsworth asked, coming closer. What were you saying, Elizabeth?
It's Elizabeth Victoria—
I know your name, he sneered. You've reminded me enough times, haven't you? No one wants to use so many words when they talk to a person.
At least she has a pretty name, Owen said, only then realizing his thoughts had spilled out of his mouth before he could think through the wisdom of sharing them. Evie went into a hysterical fit of shocked giggles, but the blood rushed into Dunsworth's face and his mouth twisted into an angry frown.
What?
The bigger boy said coldly. Owen was saved by Ratcliffe's sudden entrance into the breakfast hall. He glanced around Dunsworth, almost sighing with relief. Seeing his look, the older boy whirled around as the Espeon Master strode into the room. He turned back to give Owen a look that promised future vengeance, and stalked away. Ratcliffe clapped his hands.
"The king is coming! The king is coming!" he said with his hasty breath. "Much is happening today, so no dawdling."
"You were brilliant,"
Evie whispered in Owen's ear. She gave him a light kiss on the cheek. It was Owen's turn to flush.
"He's a bully,"
he said brusquely, his insides starting to squirm. Ratcliffe made a few curt announcements, and then Owen heard the shuffle step portending the king's entrance into the breakfast hall. As he came inside, a dark claw seemed to reach out and pierce Owen's heart. Even after jumping into the cistern, even after talking to Anchorette almost all night, his courage wilted from the mere sight of the king and the dagger hanging from his belt.
"Ooh, the thimbleberries are ripe," Evie crooned, tugging Owen toward the table.
She loved the fresh berries from the palace gardens. Everyone began to sample the delights of bread, fruit, and cheese that the kitchen had prepared. The king, as he usually did, lurked amidst the guests and ate sparingly.
"You're dropping half those berries on the floor,"
the king chided Evie as he passed.
"Slow down. The cook will make the leftovers into jellies."
"They are delicious, my lord,"
she said with a grin, impervious to his criticism. Then she grabbed a wafer and crammed it into her mouth.
"Ah, a respite from her tales,"
the king said mockingly, but his expression was pleased. Besides Princess Elise, who happened to be there that morning, Evie was the only person in the breakfast hall who wasn't intimidated by him. Although the king teased her, he seemed to respect her courage and never aimed to wound her. Severn looked at her with his gray eyes, and Owen noticed the dark smudges in his hollows. He was fidgeting with his dagger again, making the boy's courage shrivel even more. This was the best opportunity Owen was going to get, but his tongue felt swollen in his mouth. Evie grabbed a goblet and quickly gulped down some drink as Owen stared at the king, willing himself to speak. The king's gaze met his own, and there was a moment of curiosity, of interest. He seemed to realize that Owen wanted to speak to him, and so he paused just slightly, his look observant and interested. Owen just stared at him, his legs like rocks, his stomach churning like butter. His throat was so dry he wanted to snatch the goblet away from Evie and drown in it. The king, narrowing his eyes with a flicker of disappointment, turned away from them and took a halting step toward Ratcliffe, who was approaching rapidly. Owen felt the sickness of defeat encase his heart, dragging him down. He had failed. He felt Evie's hand clasp his own.
"What is it, Owen?" she asked him. "You look sick."
Her hand. They had jumped together into the cistern. Holding her hand, he could do it. He squeezed her fingers hard before he could shrink with fear. Ratcliffe was almost to the king when Owen's little voice croaked out,
"My lord, I had a dream last night. It was a strange dream."
I am caught in a web. How did I get entangled? I convinced myself that Anchorette was harmless, that providing information to her would aid me. How could I have been so blind? She has wrested secrets of the Espeon from me and is using them to preserve the life of the Kiskaden boy. I know it, and yet I dare not confront her. She is in the kitchen often now, and one does not double-cross a poisoner without pain.
Dominique Mancini, Espeon of the Palace Kitchen.
Chapter 22.
Fountain Blessed. As Owen finished telling the king about his dream, the look on the older man's face completely transformed. Gone was the snide hostility. The king seemed thunderstruck, and he grabbed the table edge to steady himself. Ratcliffe, who had overheard the whole thing, stared at Owen incredulously as well, his mouth gaping.
"Ratcliffe, did you tell him?"
the king whispered hoarsely.
Is there any way he could have known?
Ratcliffe stared down at Owen with open distrust. "My lord, I don't see how. It's incredible."
"Your Espeon in the kitchen, was he talking? Was he babbling secrets?"
I don't think so," Ratcliffe said.
"It doesn't make any sense."
"It makes perfect sense,"
the king said, his voice distant, his eyes intense. He stared down at Owen, his expression changing to one of pleasure.
"So this was a dream you had, was it? Last night?"
"Yes, my lord,"
Owen answered meekly, still clinging to Evie's hand to keep from drifting away in the current of fear that wanted to extinguish his voice.
"A pine cone,"
Severn repeated thoughtfully. He gave Ratcliffe a knowing look. Anchorette was right. There was no confusion at all, though Owen was still baffled.
"Well, lad,"
the king said, resting his other hand on Owen's shoulder and giving it a playful nudge.
"You will be sure to tell me, should you have any other such dreams."
"If it pleases you, my lord,"
Owen said with a small bow.
"It does indeed, Owen. It pleases me much. How old are you again?"
"He's 8, Ratcliffe said, fidgeting with great energy.
"Shall we continue with our plans, then?" "The fountain has blessed it,"
Severn said with a mocking laugh.
"See it done, Ratcliffe. Immediately."
Then he turned his attention back to Owen.
"Well, lad, enjoy your breakfast."
As the king limped away, Owen realized the eyes of everyone in the room were fixed on him. There were servants and children, nobles who had come to petition the king. He had announced his dream in front of a hall full of witnesses. Many of them were beginning to whisper behind their hands, openly curious about the boy who had spoken.
"You didn't tell me you had a dream," Evie said, pulling Owen aside. "Have you had these before?"
He shook his head.
"It was the first time. It was like a vision."
He felt guilty lying to her, but he could not reveal the truth, certainly not without Anchorette's permission. The meaning of Anchorette's story became tremendously clear later that morning when Lord Asilomar, from the east coast of Ceredigion, and his wife were trussed up on canoes and launched into the river from the island of Our Lady to plummet to their deaths over the falls. This was the first public execution Owen had attended in his life. They watched from the lower walls of the palace, and even from such a distance they could see the thousands of people who had gathered to watch the canoes gain speed before charging off the falls. There was a collective gasp as the two vessels reached the terminus and pitched off. Owen stared, wondering again what it would be like. When Duke Horwath returned from Our Lady, he clutched something in his hand, a banner. Owen had not seen the Duke for several days. He had left the palace on an assignment for the king, which was almost certainly related to today's proceedings. And then Owen understood. The banner held the badge of House Asilomar. The badge of House Asilomar was a large pine cone stuck on a branch with pine needles. The pine cone had fallen into the river and run over the falls, just like in Owen's dream.
"Look at it, Owen,"
Evie said, when her grandfather showed her the crumpled banner. She stared at it in wonder before turning to look at him.
"You saw it. You saw it in your dream."
Horwath's eyes were narrowed at him, his face a mask devoid of emotions.
"Everyone is talking,"
he said in his quiet way.
"They are saying young Kiskaden may be fountain-blessed."
"Of course he is, Grandpapa,"
Evie answered with a glint in her eye.
"I've always known that."
She grabbed and clung to Owen's arm possessively. There was a peculiar feeling in Owen's stomach. A shy smile crossed his face, but he said nothing. Later, as he knelt in the kitchen arranging tiles, he found it difficult to concentrate because of all the visitors coming in and out, wanting to see him. There were whispers and comments, and even though he was trying not to listen, he could pick out some of the words. Leona took the time to explain what he was doing to the visitors.
"Yes, he's in the kitchen every day playing with those tiles. My husband Drew found them for him. He stacks them up and then knocks them down. No, he makes different patterns, sometimes straight rows, sometimes circles. It's the oddest thing you've ever seen, I'll warrant. Bless me if he doesn't come here every day. He's a clever lad. He's always been shy and clever."
"Ignore them." Evie was lying on her stomach with her chin propped on her wrist.
"I've always believed you were fountain-blessed, Owen. Do you know how rare that is? There was a fountain-blessed boy in North Cumbria once who could talk to wolves."
He felt a prickle of apprehension that made him knock over one of the tiles and collapse the tower he was building. He frowned with anger and started building it again. All the attention made him feel good, but at the same time he was lying to his best friend. He knew he wasn't fountain-blessed. This was Anchoret's trick. He didn't mind tricking the king. Or Ratcliffe, especially not Dunsworth. But he did not like the thought of tricking her.
"I wonder how many of our children will be that way,"
Evie sighed dreamily. Grabbing a tile, she examined it closely before setting it back down.
"It's not impossible. But sometimes more than one child can have it. But usually just one in a family. One who is special. Your mother had many children, so odds were good that one of you would be. I think it's that tuft of white hair that marks you. It was a sign from the fountain."
The feeling of discomfort wriggling in his stomach was growing worse. He wanted to tell her very badly. It was eating away inside of him.
"It's almost as rare as surviving a waterfall," she continued.
She was always prattling, even when he didn't feel like speaking.
"About 1 in 100 survive. There are always soldiers down at the bottom of the falls to see if anyone makes it. Lord Asilomar and his wife didn't. They drowned."
"That's awful," Owen said softly, working on the tower again.
"It's the punishment for being a traitor, Owen. The king didn't kill their boy. They had one son who is 4. The king sent him to be ward to Lord Lovell in Southport. I wouldn't want to marry someone younger than me. That would be disagreeable. I'm glad we're the same age."
Owen was amazed at how many people continued to come through the kitchen that day. The old gray-haired butler, Berwick, entered several times and complained loudly about the ruckus and how meals were not going to be served on time because of all the talk and nonsense.
"You'd think the lad spruited wings and took a turn in the sky," he said brusquely. "A heap of bother. A lucky guess. Everyone knew Asilomar was a traitor. He's from East So."
"None of us here knew it," Leona said challengingly. "Being from the East doesn't make someone a traitor, Berwick. Hold your tongue."
"Hold my tongue? You should hold your tongue. You've been blabbing all day to visitors and such. Not an honest piece of work done all day long. It'll quiet Dune. You'll see."
"I don't like Berwick," Owen said softly.
"I enjoy hearing him talk," Evie replied. I love our quaint accent from the north. My father liked to hear me speak it.
Owen looked up at her.
You can talk like that?
She grinned.
Forsooth, young lad, 'tis but the only